Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the MCU for Dummies. I am dummy number one, Ken. That is dummy number two, Lou. And the Eternals are now a part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe lore, Lou. And we have been introduced to these godly figures. We have been introduced to the Celestials. There is currently one in the Earth, canonically, that is like a budding to be a god, but was unallowed to become. Big spoiler alert, by the way. If you have not seen the Eternals, do that. Lewis, Eternals, you had said many times that this was one of your most anticipated movies of the Phase 4 lineup. Did it live up to your hype, or is it the worst movie that you've ever seen, according to Rotten Tomatoes?
Well, it's a pleasure to be here. Those seem to be the two polarizing sides of this debate, my friend. It's either this was incredible, given in like the top four or five movies in some MCU rankings, or this is just the worst viewing experience since Passion of the Christ. I won't say it's the best movie I've ever seen. I won't say it's the best Marvel movie I've ever seen. But I do think that it aligns with the characteristic that a lot of people use, which is the movie was ambitious. It was long. Sure. But it was certainly ambitious. And I left it saying, I'm happy that I saw it. However, I did feel like my entire Saturday was ruined because I saw it at like 11:30 and I ended up getting out at like 3 because it was that long. But overall, that's big tough fan of
and
it.
And I'm assuming you're meaning 11:30 in the morning and then you got out at like 3 in the afternoon.
Yeah, because I had plans later that day. So I was like, I don't want to get back at like 1:30, 2 o'clock. I'm in the city, walking home. You don't know who's going to try to stab me with a rusty Snapple can. So
I don't know.
That's that was my plan. But what did you think? And how did you see it? Because I saw it in like super duper IMAX, which like scared the shit out of me because it was loud as hell. Everything just vibrated. Everything. Yeah. And the movie was so grand with everything.
I was actually very jealous. I was jealous to see that you did that. I was looking for a time that worked. I have a buddy down here who used to be my realtor, and I go see every MCU movie with him when they come out. Normally see them opening day or the day after, and so we just got to like find times that work. He lives like an hour away now, so we got to just like make, because I mean, you keep, because we got to eat at Dave & Buster's before we go. That's like that's canon in our movie going experiences. You go to Dave & Buster's and then you go to the movie.
You guys play any games while you're there?
Sometimes if we get there early enough, there'll be a game played or two, you know, it depends. Anyway, I digress. So you just got to kind of find a time that works, and so we unfortunately had to watch it in standard. But it was still like gorgeous and visually very appealing. And for everybody who's ever said that like the MCU's colors are boring, like, which is I find to be a very strange comment, like from a cinematic universe that has like Black Panther and Guardians of the Galaxy and Ant-Man and the Wasp and Ant-Man himself, like those movies are very colorful, but okay. It was still like a good viewing experience. The theater was packed again, which I thought was really cool. It wasn't that way for Black Widow and it wasn't that way for Shang-Chi. So it was cool to see like all the seats filled, like kind of like online to get into the movies. Like it just adds to the whole experience of the MCU, right? I think that's why people love it so much. The viewing experience was good. The movie was good. I think it's like mid-tier. I do think it's probably, I don't know, like it's way better than Black Widow, in my opinion.
Way better than Thor: The Dark World.
Way better than Thor: The Dark World.
We had to do one of those rankings.
We'll get in there
and stuff. But let me throw out some movies to you, and you just tell me: does Eternals rank higher or lower?
Okay.
I think what's fair is as measured by your overall viewing experience, because I think some movies get extra points because they had broader implications down the road. And in retrospect, they were very good.
Including, I think this one, I think you need to add this one to that category because this changed a lot. It will change a lot moving forward.
Yeah. Like a movie that had very low implications and very low viewer appreciation was The Hulk. There's just nothing that we're taking away from there. Cause he's just tremendously
big guy.
Underutilized in the greater MCU. But how about let's start with this. Is the Eternals, or did you enjoy it? I just clicked on a banner ad and a bunch of Black Friday Best Buy ads popped up.
Black Friday already, eh?
Was the Eternals better or worse for you than Captain Marvel?
Boof.
Oh no. Okay, well let's come back. Come on. That was a bad one. Was it better or worse than the first Thor?
Better.
Okay. Better or worse than the first Ant-Man?
Better.
Okay, so The Eternals is better than Ant-Man, better than Thor in your book, better than Age of Ultron.
I'm a Age of Ultron stan, but that movie is still bad, so better.
Okay. We haven't hit the ceiling yet. We know it's there a little bit with the Captain Marvel, but let's try to poke around. Better or worse than Black Panther?
Worse.
Okay. So we just found some level there.
Yeah.
Better or worse than Doctor Strange?
I like Doctor Strange. I think it was worse than Doctor Strange.
Okay. Better or worse than Endgame?
Worse.
Okay. And Infinity War?
Worse.
Okay. What about First Avengers?
Worse.
Okay. So Eternals is worse than all of the big team ups, except Age of Ultron. And you still think Captain Marvel is ahead of the Eternals?
No. I think Eternals is better than Captain Marvel, but I like Captain Marvel, so I want to be conscious of that.
Okay, so what you're saying is you didn't really love the Eternals, but it's pretty high.
It's mid tier. It's mid tier. I think it settles nicely. I mean, there's like 28 of these movies.
25 movies now. So 25. They're starting to add up.
It settles nicely in the teens. I think. Yeah. Somewhere between 15 and 19.
What about as far as this year goes? Is this the best movie that was released?
The second best. I think Shang-Chi wins by a long stretch. That was a really cool movie. They did a really good job with that one. I think Black Widow, like, now it was really cool because we hadn't seen a movie in 2 fucking years, right?
Yeah.
It's not great. It's not great. I think we can all agree to that.
Black Widow?
Yeah.
It really did. It followed the formula, though, to a T.
It did, but almost like too well. You know, like Shang-Chi followed the formula, right? But that was a good movie with like compelling, you know, storytelling. Black Widow was just like, and you know me, I appreciate fan service. I think fan service is important in like a comic booky thing. But it was bad. And I think like Black Widow falls in the low 20s or mid 20s and Eternals falls in the late teens. So we haven't seen like, and Shang-Chi probably falls in like the early teens or like the tens, right? Like in that region. So we haven't seen like a big banger, you know, in phase 4 yet. I think we're all saving our shekels up for Spider-Man No Way Home. If there's any movie left to see, if somebody hasn't already put it on friggin' like Facebook Live or some shit.
We'll get to that in a few. I think it's one of the most I just can't wait to hear the story. They must have abused the entire staff or something, or they didn't pay people for weeks because everyone on that staff is so angry, with the exception of like the leading cast, who are just, I don't know. I feel bad for like the Andrew Garfields and Tobey Maguires because everybody knows they're going to be in it and they have to just play a stupid game here. Jonathan Majors was in an article with Variety and he said that one of the hardest experiences of his life was holding the Loki secret down for 10 months. So that's pretty funny. But yeah, I agree with you. We'll see if we get the Spider-Man No Way Home.
Fingers crossed, man.
Entire movie
we'll
on Facebook Live.
We'll see if we get to see the movie. They may just at some point just be like, you know what? You guys don't even fucking get it. Stop.
Or they'll be like, we're just going to make it into a comic book now and now you don't get the movie. right, I almost feel like the Black Widow formula was of like what we like used to see in like late phase one. Or I mean, entire phase one, early phase two, and now it just doesn't cut it. Like the Black Widow origin story versus the Shang-Chi origin story is night and day. And I would expect more of the Shang-Chi going forward just because there's just like more at stakes, I guess. Like every movie is getting $100 to $200 million to make up. So I wonder if we continue to see that trend going forward. But
hopefully
overall,
they can fix the third act, Lewis.
The third act, always weak. I wonder what they had to say about the third act of the Eternals if they didn't like the big marble creature.
I think what they could say about the third act of the Eternals is that it was fucking bonkers.
Yeah.
Like, it was fucking chaotic.
Let's talk about some of the broader implications of the Eternals. So the Eternals are here. They are canon, and more than half of them are still alive after the first movie. True. So Cersei is pointed as the leader of the Eternals. Cersei, Phastos, and
Fast Lady?
Kumail Nanjiani's character. Kimble?
Kimbo.
Kimbo. Yeah. They have been taken to the space god Arishem's dungeon to be assessed at a Kingo. They've been taken to the space god Arisham to be assessed at a later date. Thena, played by Angelina Jolie. Let's see, who else do we have here? Druig and Makari are in a spaceship with Harry Styles, off to go see where everyone's at. And in this movie, we technically have lost Icarus, played by Rob Stark, Ajax, played by Selma Hayek. Sprite has now become a real person, so yep, one would have to assume that we probably lose her. And Gilgamesh.
Yes.
So how do you see the trio of Kingo, Phastos, and Cersei with the space gods? How do you see that playing? And then how do you see the Athena, Harry Styles group in space?
Drop the A, Lewis. Athena. It's just Athena.
So basically, how do you see those that are being criticized by the space gods?
Yeah.
And then how do you see those that are like Guardians of the Galaxy Part 2?
Adjacent, right?
Right. How do you see all really this playing cool out into the MCU?
I think it's really... this is why I think Eternals is so cool. Because it's like... I don't know. Like, there's no answer to anything. Like, it was just like, great, here's this movie. Here's these... Like, here's this massive canon story that apparently is happening while, I don't know, Doctor Strange is out, like, I don't know, getting dinner or something.
Yeah, why doesn't he ever know about this stuff?
I don't know. Nobody ever knows shit, man. Nobody, like, the Hulk is still around. Doctor Strange is still around. Oh, White Vision, by the way, is out there. You know? Like, who knows?
He's just lurking.
Who knows when this
White Vision is in New Asgard playing Fortnite with new Master 69.
Exactly. So,
and,
like, who,
and Korg.
Who knows? Who knows where anybody is, but there's, like, a giant space god birthing from the center of the earth and nobody gives a shit.
Well, we don't know that yet. Because Eternals, I believe they gave us a date. I think it happened 5 years post Thanos. So that would lead us to, this is the most futuristic in the Earth timeline movie.
Okay. So this is the most up to date.
So this would be, I think, like 2027.
Okay.
Which means I don't know. No, I think it was 5 years since the first blip. We got to figure this out. I'm going to pull up a quick Google. Because if that's the case, then when does Spider-Man No Way Home fit into all
this? Yeah, I don't know. That's where my confusion comes from. Because it's like, did nobody else care? Like, you got the Hulk is around. Doctor Strange is around. You've got Sam Wilson is around, right? Bucky is around. All these earthbound heroes that are just kind of chilling, and White Vision and the Scarlet Witch and Agatha Harkness. All of these people are just kind of, you know, like lumbering around on Earth, and Tiamat is erecting himself from the core of the Earth, and everybody's like, yeah, well, fuck, man, we're toast.
Yeah. All right, let's do a quick recap. So this is thanks to Screen Rant. So WandaVision was set 3 weeks after the blip. Falcon and the Winter Soldier was set 6 months after the blip. Due to the five-year time jump between Avengers Infinity War and Endgame, which seems crazy, all the Disney Plus shows released so far have actually taken place in 2023. Also, this is like just such a stupid concept that they have to like make up these years as they come out. Okay, so all the shows have take place in 2023. The return of the Deviants and Eternals will actually happen in the summer of 2024, and it's been confirmed to be set around the same time as Spider-Man Far From Home, 8 months following the events of Endgame.
Okay. All right, so they're right in the same area. They're like all happening in the same time frame. Okay, that's good to know.
If it happened, so I wonder if they're... The first question I'll ask you, are there any implications that you think from this movie that would lead to Far From Home and the weird Doctor Strange events that we saw? And do you think that we will see any Eternal make a feature in the Spider-Man movie?
I do not believe that there will be any Eternals in Spider-Man Far From Home. I think we may get a Shang-Chi in Spider-Man Far From Home. I think... Obviously, that movie is going to just be full of shit, right? Like, it's going to be awesome shit. I'm going to, like, lose my mind when I see Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield. But, like, I don't know if they need anything else, right? And the Goblin, you know, and friggin' Molina, Doc Ock, the whole nine. Like, it's going to be really cool. So I don't know if they can squeeze an Eternal in there. I think the Eternals as, like, their own movie thing, like Guardians, like keeping them separate as much as you can is going to be really cool. Like, let them build up their own canon, their own universe, right? With still some like obvious implications since they were Earthbound for a while. But now that none of them are on Earth, right? I mean, the three of them are awaiting judgment with Arishem. Three of them are Guardians of the Galaxy and fucking Harry Styles all the way around the fucking galaxy. And the other one's a human lady, teenager, who's just a piece of shit that nobody cares about. And then there are two that are dead. So
we're forgetting Dane Whitman.
Right. So then you've got the King of the North. Mr. Snow is just rocking around there. He's about to be important, a Black Knight kind of guy who I don't know much about. Like, we know this is the MCU for Dummies, folks. Ooh, I don't know if Lewis knows, but I definitely know nothing.
It sounds like there's going to be some Black Knight. It sounds like they're taking Moon Knight, Blade, and the Dark Knight. And Kevin Feige said, no one knows who any of these three are.
I am like very excited. So let's put them all together. Yeah, I'm very excited for like the vampire side of the MCU, which like they keep mentioning. And I saw that, you know, we do give the folks at the New Rock Stars a shout out every now and then. And I did that, like they had brought up the fact that vampires have now been mentioned in like three straight movies or something.
Loki, Falcon and the Winter Soldier. I don't know if Shang-Chi.
And now Eternals.
Yeah.
So like there's a lot of vampires going on. I think people have confirmed that the voice in the post-credit scene with Dane Whitman, Mr. Black Knight, Mr. Jon Snow, Mr. King in the North, is Mahershala Ali's Blade, who is on the way into the MCU as well. So just like a really like vampires, right? Like what a random thing that the MCU needs. Like I thought we like would get our fill with like Twilight and shit, but no, we gotta be vampiring it up all over the MCU, which is gonna be weird.
Maybe that's how Bill Murray gets introduced. He's part of the vampire
maybe he group. Could be a vampiric council.
Yeah, so something the new Rockstar folks brought up was the possibility of, should this movie have been a TV show, should it have been serialized over the course of perhaps 6 to 7 episodes, even 10 if you were to go through each of them and their backstory? Would that have been a better use of telling a story? Which the positive, my take would be that you'd get more background information in order to understand these characters and their motives a bit. The negative, and the other side of the coin, would be that you'd lose out on having the grand scope of all of this being in a movie theater setting, and you would have lost seeing these sweeping vistas, the massive, colossal imaging of the Celestials and all that jazz, and just the understanding that we are playing on a universal scale here. So what is your take here? Do you think it should have been a show? Do you think the movie was the correct medium? How would have you gone about this?
It's a great, question, because I think there's no right answer. And I think, unfortunately, I'm on the side of TV show. And I generally am not that guy, right? Like, you know me, I like going to the movies. I like that experience. The cinematic experience is really cool to me. And Chloe Zhao is not a TV director, right? She is a movie director and she's damn good at it. So you would have lost her, I think, if we did it differently. So it's an interesting question, because the assumption of the question is that the TV show would be as beautiful as the movie. It wouldn't be, right? Because Chloe Zhao would not direct a 10-part series for TV. That's not what she does. She's a movie director, right? So you would lose her vision, which I think is what made it so beautiful and made it so sweeping and so artistic and emotional, right? All of those things came from her as much as they came from other writers on the show and whomever. So it's hard, because the best parts of that movie were the emotional beats and were the visuals and the cinematography of it. However, the people's complaints about it being like too ambitious or like trying to do too much in 2.5 hours, which is still fucking long ass time, are fair complaints, I think. I think there was a lot left to be desired, because there are so many implications from every scene, right? Like the atom bomb scene with Fastos is a huge implication, right? Like, how did he help people split the atom, right? Like, the same thing with like the other wars and with Druig taking people away from battle in Latin America or wherever he was. I think it's South America. I don't know. But you know what I mean? Like there's so many things that are so important during that film that they all could have been an episode. Right. Each of them could have gotten their own episode, could have done one by like timeline. Right. You didn't have to jump back and forth. There are so many different ways to do it on TV because it gives you that freedom to do it with that limited series or the mini series type run. And I think we could have benefited from that. There's a lot of lore. There's a lot of lore in this movie that I think some casual fans like us or some people who are new to the MCU or people who are just interested in seeing the movie could have used, right? And even people who like the comics know that the MCU is different than the comics, right? Like the same canon is not true. And this movie establishes a lot of that canon for these Celestials and these Eternals and these Deviants, et cetera, et cetera. And by bringing in Eros at the end, right, it also chronicles more Thanos stuff, right? Like we'll never, like we're not even done with his backstory, right? Like how this all started. So there's so much in there. Dane Whitman, Black Knight, totally new character, right? Like all of these things could have used some more time, right? Could have used a little bit more juice. You couldn't do it all in a movie. I think it was super ambitious, which is why I like it, even though it doesn't hit all the points. I think trying is good. I'm a fan of trying. I don't know. What do you think? I think TV would have been the appropriate way with this many characters and this much lore, but I'm interested to hear what your thoughts are.
Oh, thank you. TV, I think, is a good... I didn't mean that as a way of like, oh, thanks for letting me talk. I was just being like, oh, hey, thanks for passing the baton back over, old sport. While you were talking, I looked up Marvel movies by runtime just to try to figure out like, what does this mean by being ambitious, right? Because here are some of the ones that are over 2 hours, and then we'll talk about, are they long or are they like, what is this ambitious part? How much more time is needed to deem something being ambitious?
Right.
All right, so I'll just name out any movie that's over 2 hours and we'll start seeing a trend here. Captain America First Avenger, Captain Marvel, Iron Man 1, Iron Man 2, the regular Avengers was 2 hours.
Iron Man 2 is more than 2 hours long?
124 minutes.
Oof.
Barely. Avengers 1, 2 hours and 23 minutes. It's like 10 minutes less than the Eternals, but no one was calling that movie ambitious. Iron Man 3.
Well, that's the thing, I think. Jesus,
Captain America, the Winter Soldier, was 2 hours and 16 minutes. Guardian of the Galaxy was a minute over 2 hours. Guardian of the Galaxy Volume 2, Age of Ultron, 2 hours and 21 minutes.
I think that's the point, though, is that all of those movies, you could give me the plot on an index card.
Right. That's what I'm
you know? So I think with the Eternals, the thing is you needed it even at 224, you didn't have enough time.
That's what I'm kind of setting up here. So I think the point is that it's not necessarily the runtime. It's just the degree of story first off that they were trying to tell.
Sure.
But I also think that the story fits the runtime. Like I think it's appropriate is what I'm trying to say here, because I think when we look at the implications, the broader implications going forward, there's so much that was set up during this, and I think it will make sense. Like when there's standalone TV shows or there's like part twos that are going to be diving into specific topics that came up from this movie, I think we'll look back and say, okay, that makes sense. Because if we were to look back at Captain America or Captain Marvel, maybe we would have said, okay, that was a little too long. I personally thought it was too long. I didn't think it was ambitious, but now I know it's important because it tells a pretty important story about a good character going forward. So that's what I find interesting here, this whole like ambition versus time length thing, because I did feel like it got a little draggy, especially towards the end. But I didn't think they'd tried telling too much story. And I think for like your average Marvel watcher that this was just fine. It was a perfect movie. It was a perfect scope. It was like great part of the canon. So no issues there. I just thought that like there was a little bit of fat towards the end that could have been cut back a bit. It would have corralled this into like 2 hours and 10 minutes. And then I wonder if everybody would still be saying this was ambitious.
Yeah, I wonder. I just think, you know, you add in I don't know, any movie with 10 main characters.
That's another thing too. Yeah, it's about
is going to be long, right?
Yeah.
And any movie with 10 main characters more than likely is never going to have enough time to give you the background that you desire on each specific character, right? Like, there's just no way. It's impossible to give everybody the amount of time. I mean, like Ajax, I thought got shafted, right? Like, I wanted to see way more of her, right? Like, way, way, way more. I wanted to see way more of Gilgamesh, right? And Thena, who was friggin' Angelina Jolie for some reason we only got like 10 minutes of screen time with, right? Yeah. So, like, there's any movie with 10 main characters, never going to get that type of deep breath storytelling. And to Chloe Zhao's credit and to Marvel's credit, to make that movie still so emotional, right? To still have those emotional beats in a movie where you weren't able to spend as much time with certain characters that you wanted is really impressive. And that's Chloe Zhao for you. She's able to do those things like a master. Yeah. But anyway, I think my point being, is that I would have, based on the amount of lore that is in this movie with Celestials and Eternal gods and universe building, legitimate universe building, not like, you know, storytelling universe building, but like how they actually like build universes in the MCU, apparently, it would have been great to have more time with Arishem. Would have been great to have more time with Thena. Would have been great to have more time with Ajax. And the only way they were going to be able to do that was in a Disney Plus show. However, this movie was grand and it deserved a grand, display.
Yeah.
So the movies are the only way to do that. I don't know. It's a good question.
I think it'll age well. I think it'll get a lot of supplemental parts going forward that will help drive the story. And that's why I'm pretty high on the movie. So key part of the movie was the fact that Earth and its evolution and its energy and all that has allowed the civilization and the population to grow was to benefit this growing giant that was hunkered down in the center of the Earth's core named Tiamat. And Tiamat was trying to erupt because it was time. Poppy said it was time. And a question we come back to often in phase four was, what were the implications of Thanos? What were the true implications of this man, this mad titan? Did he have our best interests at heart? And do you think he ever gets a redemption story in the MCU? Because based on what the Eternals is trying to tell us, Thanos, part deviant, part Eternal, it's a weird thing, go look it up. He would have known that this was the thing. His brother seems to know this is a thing. Yeah. Was he trying to save us? Why'd you make that face?
It's because I think yes. Okay, it's because I think we know now, based on what we know from Eternals and what we know from Infinity War, which was Thanos' movie, right? Like, we know for a fact that Titan, his home planet, was ruined, right? And he was very upset by that. And it was because the population had grown too much, right? And there was a potential that the reasoning why is because it had to grow because there may have been a Celestial in it, right?
And it also looks like there was a Celestial because the planet looks wrecked.
Right? So, like, I don't know. I don't know. I think there's definitely some argument to the idea that Thanos wanted to negate half the population to stop Celestials from birthing inside planets and killing everybody, right? Offing entire species, offing entire, races, right? So I don't know. I think there could be something there, man. I don't know if he'll ever get like a full like redemption arc because he's fucking Thanos and he killed Tony Stark, right? Like, that probably will never fly. But I think a lot of people, like, what a way to make like the worst villain you've ever seen, like in a superhero movie, like make him like redeemable, like just by saying, hey, he kept humans alive by erasing half of you. Although it seems, and we'll get, I'm sure we're going to get to this in a minute, it seems like Tiamat was like, I don't fucking want to be a thing, so just fucking off me too, because I'm fucking toast.
Well, could it have been like a combination of the two? And even to like interweave some like current real world philosophy here, the paradox of, is human life special? Is, did it make some leap that other species out there just couldn't do? And is that like, are we just like the extreme outlier as opposed to the normal occurrence throughout the galaxy? Obviously with the Marvel Cinematic Universe, you see alien species all the time, so it's a little different.
Sure.
But some of the qualities that have been demonstrated, like Captain America and Tony Stark, the core Avengers, which besides Hulk are basically just humans, besides Thor are humans. So is there something special that, you know, kept this ball rolling? And is it not just like another planet? It's something about Earth that, you know, makes all of this happen. I just find it a little strange, and I think this is, this will be a very interesting thing to see how they weave together, is how much of this like ultimate Earth building facts come into play when there's like multiverse implications. So like, is that like, is Kang the master of the physical world where there's celestials bursting out of planets and they need human population to help them grow? And is he also the master of the multiverse, which is something that Doctor Strange can conjure together so Peter Parker can play with himself,
wow, and
fly around space? Because it has to like lead up to someone. Like, who is ultimately going to be the shot caller, and what is Kang's like ultimate role going to be? So
that's a really fascinating point, Lewis. I don't know. That's such a good point that it makes my brain hurt, because the idea of the multiverse makes me want to fucking jump off a bridge anyway, because it's almost too much for your brain to like,
and you got Quantumania.
Yeah, I don't know if I can deal with the Quantumania, and we're getting too small, and we can like go into different timelines. I don't fucking get it. All I know is that there's a big alien god in the Earth's core sucking all its juice up, okay? Like it's on the hub, okay? And it's just like just going for it. And then it's going to burst out and be a universe and life creating god that for some reason humans, the human species, which is shitty, has decided, or the Eternals who guard the human species, which again is shitty, have decided that we should not allow to happen. I find myself, Lou, and this is my question to you, I find myself very aligned with Kingo, with Kumail in the movie, where he's just like, I don't agree with what you guys are doing.
Yeah, he was awesome during that scene towards the end.
He's like, I don't like it. I'm not with you. But if you pull it off, we're friends. Like, good luck. But I'm not getting involved either. And I'm very much with him, because I don't fucking know if that was a good idea. Like, I'm sure, like, granted, if it bursted out of the Earth, that's the end of the MCU, right? Because, like, that'd be no good if there was no Earth left. But, I mean, like, the moral implications of that idea are, like, pretty deep, and I don't like it.
Yeah.
So what do you, like, who do you align with? Are you a Cersei? Are you turning Tiamat into marble? Are you Rob Stark? Are you going to Superman everybody until he blows the Earth into oblivion? Or are you more Kingo, where you just don't give a damn?
That's why I think this movie, a proper explanation of why this movie was so ambitious, because it's not the overall story in the canon and all that timeline sort of thing. It's the fact that there was so many other, I really truly felt like the conflict towards the end in phase, mm-hmm. in the third act. Like, I really did feel like, I don't know, should we keep this thing going? Should we destroy this thing? Like, I was like, I don't know, but I kind of felt with Kingo there. I was like, let's just see how this plays out.
Yeah.
And it played out well. I'm curious to see how it's going to continue. Like, what's the first movie that's going to address this massive erupted mountain that is now poking out of the ocean? And how is there no like other global implications of this? Like, how is he not impacting other ecosystems? How is he not impacting like the water levels? This thing literally just erupted out of the core of the Earth. And
I actually think, Lou, I think Black Panther 2 may, because
the earthquake thing,
and this is a big old prediction. Not even the new rock stars folks have this one yet, okay? So you heard it here first.
We know where it originated.
Think the the implications of this guy kind of rumbling the core of the Earth will impact Atlantis. And that's why the Atlantis and Wakanda are going to have their conflict in Black Panther 2. I think that all comes from Tiamat's dick coming out of the Earth's crust.
And isn't it so cool that you can like sit here and think like, oh, I wonder if this big space giant thing erupting from the Earth is going to implicate a movie 2 years in the future, mainly because they can't get it out because the lead fake co-star doesn't want to get vaccinated. But I digress.
Oh, Letitia.
Like, that's just cool. It's like when you play, you know, like I see this like when I play games or even like other movies, there's no element of where does this go? It's just like that's it. That's the story. And you see it often with video games a lot where part two sucks. It's really just like a money grab because the first original story was such a great creative idea to then tell, like there's often not enough left on the cutting room floor. So with like Marvel, it's cool to like walk out of the movie theater and be like, wow, I wonder what's going to happen next. And I might have to wait 2 or 3 years for it to play out. That's why I think this year was so special, that's because there was so much content that did come out that was cool. I know it's going to keep continuing going forward, but this first year seems like it was different because it was the first wave after the Endgame.
I think we need to, yes, it does. And it should. And what it needed to do, Lou, what it needed to do is evolve past the one villain, right? Like forever we had been worried about Thanos. There were 23 movies worried about Thanos. Sure, each movie had its own villain, but everybody in the entirety of the MCU was worried about this one guy, was worried about the Infinity Stones, right? That's what 23 movies relied on. You came back from that after a year and a half hiatus because of COVID and because of other factors. You come back from that, and now you're set up in a way where there are so many things happening that you don't know where the hell it's going to go. And I think that's awesome, right? You have the Celestials. You have Arishem out there who wants the Earth to fucking blow up, right? You've got Kang out there who knows what the hell he's up to. You've got Wanda out there who knows what the hell she's up to. And you've got White Vision who's just floating around like this crazy man. This is a painful topic
for you, the White Vision.
I just don't know what he's doing. But he's just out there trying to repair the ship of Theseus at all times. So like there's just so many angles for it to go. You just got introduced to Eros, who is the brother of Thanos. He can't be all up to good things, right? Like there's no way. You know, you've got Mr. Whitman on the way and Blade and other people. You know that the Spider-Man villains and all that shit are all coming into the MCU. Like it's just bananas, right? Yeah. And you know there's a big bad in there somewhere. You just don't know who it is. Is it Kang? Is Kang the overall big bad? I don't know.
I think that's what they're trying to get at here. But it's interesting like how they're setting up his scope with all these movies. Because they kind of get to also exist on... They get to piggyback off of the Infinity Items. Because what we learned in Loki was that He Who Remains set everything up. And it was Kang all along. Just like Agatha, shout out getting their own TV show, so that's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think that's what it will be interesting about this going forward. I'm really interested to see like towards the end of this show, we're gonna talk about some of the Disney Plus announcements from Disney Plus Day. But I'm interested to see like when is Phase 4 gonna get like kind of snipped, and then when's Phase 5 gonna come out? Because I don't know if we're gonna get that penultimate moment that everybody loves to talk about. I don't know if we're going to get like that big payoff, like, hey, here's the bookmark end of it. That's one of my big questions. I know like it seems like they're going to weave in some of the bigger folks here and there. Like we're going to get some Star-Lord in God, Love, and Thunder. That seems like it's going to be a big movie, but is it going to be like a Winter Soldier? Is it going to be like a Civil War? Are we going to get like movies like that again? Maybe it's Multiverse of Madness. So I don't know like what is going to happen going forward. We're going to get these like big bookend tentpole type phase movies going forward. And if you think so, then which one do you think part of the slate is going to be that big tentpole film?
Yeah, it's a good question, man. I mean, phase four is supposed to end with Blade. And it's supposed to include things like Black Panther 2, Guardians 3, Quantumania, and the Fantastic Four, which we have heard nothing about over the last, you know, however many Disney Plus days. Try to get
John Krasinski involved.
Yeah, fuck no, please don't. Like, why? Why do we have to? Why does everything have to be John Krasinski and fucking Chris Pratt?
They're like willing it into existence. Anytime you look like Phase 4, or you type in Fantastic Four MCU, it's always John Krasinski's face, like,
always
photoshopped on it.
I am, if I'm not fucking careful, and I've tweeted this out on the MCU account, but like, if we're not careful, Lou, Chris Pratt is going to end up playing you in bed with your wife. Like, that's just how this whole world goes now. Chris Pratt just gets the role, no matter what character it is, no matter what, like, it doesn't matter. He's going to get the role. So it could be you, and it could be in bed with your wife. Anyway, Phase 4 is supposed to end with Blade, according to the MCU fandom.com, is supposed to go all the way through, including Black Widow, Shang-Chi, Eternals, No Way Home, Multiverse, Love and Thunder, Wakanda Forever, Marvel's Guardians 3, Quantumania, Fantastic Four, and Blade are supposed to be your Phase 4 films. Now, the television series are bananas, right? It goes all the way through.
I got to pause you.
You want to lead us there.
I got to pause you real quick. Okay. We'll be right back, folks.
What happened?
All right, we're back after some technical difficulties. A lot going on in the back end. Both of our camera feeds weren't working. Ken was highly delayed for the last 10 to 15 minutes, so I've just been watching him on this weird chopping motion. I don't know if he was seeing the same thing too. And then also, folks, I don't know if you could hear it, but I'm sick, so I was holding in a whole bunch of snot in my nose and had to get rid of that too. TMI on both bases, but now we're back.
Yes.
We'll wrap up the final innings of this conversation. We were talking about Thanos, Ken. We were talking about here's a good question that you phrased in our text chain. Philosophical one. Should we selfishly be killing off universes and life creating gods like we do with Tiamat?
Yeah, I don't know. The weird thing, Lou, to me is that Tiamat, according to Cersei, Tiamat joined the hive mind, right? Like joined the, as they call it, the Unimind. Which
didn't this sound like a bit like orginess? Like, oh, Jesus, he was supposed to die, and they're like, what happened? Like, oh, he just joined in, and it's like, oh, yeah, great, cool.
God, sweet. I definitely wish they didn't call it the Unimind, right? Like, what a dumb thing for something to be called.
Yeah.
But they did, so here we are. He apparently wanted to be dead, right? Like, he joined the mind to self. And you know what, though? If you're on Earth and you've seen everything that humans are capable of, I'm with you, Tiamat, right? Like, there's no reason to go on. So I don't know. I definitely don't think we should be killing gods. I mean, they create universe, right? Like, they created us to begin, and then we have to die so somebody else can live, right? Like, that's the idea, I suppose. What do you think?
Yeah, it sets a weird precedent. I guess we would have to know more of the story about what what role he played when he joined in on all the fun. But I think it's like a weird, oh, hey, did you guys know this? I guess the precedent that the movie set was that any like form of space is technically a celestial in waiting.
Right, it could be, right? Not all, I suppose, not all planets or entities have.
I mean, do we know that?
Celestials? I don't know. They could.
So it sets up a lot of like interesting. I feel like Kevin Feige was like, "Hey guys, look, I don't know what we're gonna do like in the future, so I need a movie that just sets up a whole bunch of plot lines. Well, can you guys do that for me, and then we'll just figure out the rest later? Because I might not be here for that. Because everyone keeps leaking the Spider-Man movie, so that could have been one of the things." But yeah, I think it sets an odd precedent. I think we need to learn more about the Celestials. I wonder like how emotionally connected as a viewer you can get to these Celestials, like in future movies, if there is an Eternals 2, if there is some tribunal that they're going to be offering where Arishem's going to be giving his, like, are you going to be able to connect with a Celestial? Because I think the closest thing we had was Ego, the living planet, but he was in like human form. He was like humanized. And he was more like an eternal deviant sort of vibe, if I understood that correctly. I don't know, Ken. I got a quick question for you. I see a lot of all of the MCU sleuths talking about how this movie needed more time in the oven, saying a lot of the visual effects were a little janky. I personally did not notice anything that took me out of the immersive experience, with the exception of me having to pee at like 2 hours and 15 minutes. But was there anything in the movie that you thought was like weird and like it wasn't fully baked from like a VX perspective or
video? Oh, no, FX? I thought everything looked fucking awesome. I think that was that's the thing that the movie nailed, right?
Yeah.
Like, to me anyway, I like, it was gorgeous in every way. The CG was beautiful, the acting, the costumes were beautiful, etc., right? Like, I thought, to me anyway, it all looked great. I don't know, I don't know what else people were looking for. I mean, like, it potentially, like, it was too good looking, you know what I mean? Like, there's potential that, like, maybe that's the feedback, is that, like, it looked too good, maybe? I don't know. Like,
there's one scene that comes up where Athena's fighting the deviant on the beach at the very beginning. I remember this like clear as day because it came up on our Twitter feed, and the person was like, "Oh, this movie needed more time in the oven. Like, it wasn't completely done. COVID reasons for movies not coming together." And I was like, "I don't know. I kind of see it, but I don't." And then while watching the movie, I was like, "This all looks fine. Like, I wasn't taken out of the experience at all. In fact, I thought it was good on like the parts where it really did hit well." So that was pretty cool. I just thought, just regular question that I should have thrown out there. As far as the cast goes, a lot of promising names in there. They definitely led with a lot of heavy hitters. Who were some of your favorite Eternals, and then who is like your least favorite that you wanted to kind of just discard along the way?
You know, what's upsetting to me is Sprite. You know, I don't know. I think it's unfortunate Sprite is, you know, it's one of those things that I feel, I don't know, man, why would they make her a kid? You know, like what was the point of that? And I guess like, and I did see an interview with, oh gosh, I forget the actress that plays Sprite. I'm looking it up quick. I'm vamping. Leah McHugh, who plays Sprite in the film. I saw an interview with her where she was like, "I guess it's up to you really to decide. Like, does Arishem, do the Celestials make mistakes? Right? Like, was that an error? Did they screw up by making her a kid?" And I suppose that yes, right? Because like, that was such a weird story beat. I thought that she would be like stuck as like a preteen. Was very strange to me. So I guess like I got to blame that one on Arishem, and the other Celestials. So, she would be my least favorite only because of that. Other than that, like I said earlier, I think Ajax got kind of shafted, right? Like, I really wanted to see more of her, like as the proverbial original leader for like tens of thousands of years, or just thousands of years, I suppose, based on the Earth. Like, it would have been really cool to see her do that. You know what I mean? And we saw some of it in flashbacks, but like the breaking up of the team, like, would have carried like way more emotional weight if we knew more about Ajax, I thought. The first time that we met Arishem would have been like really, really more, really much more intense if we had dealt more with Ajax. Her death, I think, would have been more emotional if we had dealt more with Ajax. So I think just from like a, like getting to know, like none of them are bad, you know, like they're all like cool characters. Like, Dean is cool. Gilgamesh is cool. Druig is fucking awesome. Makari is the coolest fast person I've ever seen in my entire life. Thena is badass, and Angelina Jolie. So who's going to be mad about that? Rob Stark is cool. Cersei's like a little bit boring to me, but I guess she has to be because she's like the most human of the group, right? So I don't think any of them are like least favorites, but I just wish we got to spend more time with Ajax, and then the like kind of the moral quandaries or the ethical quandaries of why Sprite was a kid are weird to me. What about you?
Yeah, I think what the movie did really well on is that it told everyone's motives in a pretty good way. Exception of like Sprite, Ajax. I'm trying to think here because we got, oh, Icarus. Like, it would have been nice to see like why he was so tight butthole about all of this coming into play. It's just weird. Like they're all, and I guess that kind of like hits the part of like, what are the Eternals, because they all are these amalgamations of like different past experiences. You kind of see that in like the Mad Weary, but for most of the case, like, they should be the same, right? Because they all were created by the same source. So like, why does one feel more passionate about destroying the universe to birth this god, to like follow the plan, and then why do others feel this like deeper connection with humanity here? So Icarus would have been somebody who I thought got like, gets like a better backstory. The lead, so it's like Cersei, if she's gonna be the leader, I think it's like interesting to understand why, besides the fact that she just had this like soft spot for humanity. Kingo, I thought they did a really good job at with like the Bollywood stuff, like that was hysterical. His like body man Karun was hysterical, the man who was just like videotaping him during everything.
Oh yeah, what an awesome character to have around, huh?
Yeah, that was good comic relief.
And what a good, and not even that too, but like what just such like a great encapsulation of like the humanity of the whole situation, right? Like that's the whole point of the fucking movie, right? Is like humans are worth like saving, whatever. And this guy's just like a good friend, right? Like he's just like a good dude.
Yeah, and I think you needed that. You needed this, like there's this one scene where they're at the dinner and I think someone asks him for his opinion and he's just like, oh, when they first meet Druig, or when they reunite with Druig in the Amazon, and he's like, if it was up to me, could you please like save the people or something like that? Like he's like asking them, can you please like save us? So I think you needed like some humanity to balance out the insane like god playing here. Like you see some of that with like with the boys, like all the superheroes are like other world like and you get to see like a lot of their flaws come out when they're interacting with basic members of humanity here. So I was a big fan of that. Let's see, Makari was cool, obviously big fan favorite. Makari and Phastos, obviously a lot of glass ceilings broken there, having a lead character of a movie that was communicating through sign language. And I thought it was cool that like the rest of the cast hung around with her with that. Like they were communicating back with her, where I think if you were to watch this movie in the 90s, somebody would have been like, oh, I can't understand her because she's speaking with her hands. It would have been some sort of like John Belushi Animal House type joke. But it's cool. Like seeing like, I think there's like a scene in the beginning where Phastos is just talking and then he just communicates through sign language, like naturally, which is cool. It's like everyone's accepted her and, you know, like can accommodate for, you know, her shortcomings here. Phastos, I thought was great way to take the rapper from Atlanta with Donald Glover, Paperboy, and then bring him into the Eternals as a gay father whose husband is a Muslim man. So it's just like a lot of like cool normalizing things that I really commend this movie for doing, which probably led to the fact that a lot of the conservative viewership that is part of the white man movement didn't like about this movie because it touched on a lot of the buttons.
I couldn't quite put my finger on why they didn't like it.
Yeah, so I thought it was cool because it's normalizing a lot of these things that past movies I feel like fail to address.
Where it's like almost like people with like hearing deficiencies and mental illness and gay and whomever else have been around forever.
Yeah, so it's shocking that even Captain Marvel was like 4 or 5 years ago and they couldn't even say that, what the hell is her name? Carol Danvers and Monica Rambeau were partners. It was just a lot of like wink, wink, this is the roommate sort of vibe here. I don't know if they are romantic. From my perspective, it seems like that is insinuated that they were in some sort of romantic relationship. But I don't know. So yeah, it's unfortunate. A lot of those parts in the past kind of just had the gloss over here. But then we talk about Don Lee as Gilgamesh. Gilgamesh was awesome. I think everyone wants to see more from him, but I totally understand the role that he had to play. And I think it was fine. He was great. Kingo already mentioned, I thought it was hysterical that he's just been playing this version of his grandfather and his great, great grandfather throughout Bollywood time. Thena, I thought was great too, because they use this medium of the Mad Weary to basically hint at mental illness. Like Thena just cannot live on a day-to-day basis. And then such a beautiful platonic relationship with Gilgamesh that he's like, I'll protect her. I'll just give her my corn beer that I chew on throughout the day and then feed to her. So That was awesome because there's so many scenes of them holding hands and showing affection, and it's just like it's friendship. So that was very beautiful. And then Sprite, you know, I think part of Sprite's character is that they are a child. Yeah. And in that case, like, awesome job for Liam McHugh to hold the fort with, you know, this cast of grown adults. So great job there.
And not even grown adults, but like hardcore, like
Angelina Jolie. Hollywood.
Right. Like
Selma Hayek. You know,
Jesus. Yeah. Just like an incredible cast. I like, listen, I think you said it right when you said the movie's going to age really well. Right.
Yeah.
Like, sure, maybe folks like at the initial go didn't love every single thing about it, but I think the implications of it are going to be so important. I think on a rewatch, you're going to find things that maybe you didn't think were important at the beginning, et cetera, et cetera. And I think it's going to, age very similarly to, you know, movies like Iron Man or whatever. Like when you first saw it, everybody was like, that was cool. Right. But now everybody's like, that was fucking great. You know what I mean? I think it's going to age very similarly, just because of how much was opened up because of this movie, and people are going to look back fondly on that, I think, regardless of if they thought it was all so perfectly put together right now.
I agree. Let's go through, Disney recently had an announcement for Disney Plus Day with some new titles, some new updates, and new first looks. So after this, Ken and I are going to look through Twitter to see all of the good spicy content that's been released out there. But let's just go through the back half of Phase 4. Again, this is just Disney Plus, so it does not include the movies, but some pretty, pretty interesting announcements. I think the headliner here is an X-Men TV show from the 90s. It's going to be an animated series. That is quite fascinating. We got a better look at Moonlight. It's Oscar Isaac playing a complex vigilante who suffers from a dissociative identity disorder. We'll get some good insight into more mental health issues. This one I feel like is going to be a big Ken favorite here. Spider-Man Freshman Year, an animated series where Kevin Feige is shoehorning how Peter Parker gets into the MCU through an animated series.
You know, you know why it's great? It's because we don't need to see, like, and that was always the thing. Like, we never needed to see Peter Parker get bit by the spider again, right? Like, nobody needed that. But it's going to be cool to see, like, the animated, like, version of Spider-Man, which is so, like, so fun these days because of how much they can do. And like you had mentioned a couple times, Lou, I think it's another, like, what are we getting next with Spider-Man after this? After No Way Home. I don't know, right? So what a cool way to, like, keep him involved. You know what I mean?
Yeah, although I will be annoyed if they, like, hint at Miles Morales in an animated series instead of just casting,
I know,
a lead Black Spider-Man. So that's, I hope they don't keep going that route, because that's how I kind of feel like Into the Spideyverse was.
Yeah.
And it's, like, weird that, like, the best representation of Miles Morales is from a video game when he should be in a movie.
I'm 1000% with you on that.
So a little strange.
But I think that is going to be a good one. I'm definitely excited for that one. That is going to be a favorite of mine.
Yes. Catherine Hahn returns with Agatha House of Harkness, which I wonder how much was this in play when WandaVision first came out versus, like, okay, we have something here. We need to, like, double click on this and give Agatha her own story because Catherine Hahn's amazing. What do you think about this? Do you think this is, like, in play for a while, or do you think it just came up?
Definitely seems like it just kind of came up, right? Like,
yeah.
It doesn't seem like they were planning on it, but when it became a thing, they were like, shit, you know, maybe we should give it a go.
Yeah. I agree. I'm going to read more into that and see if that comes out as true, but we shall see. Marvel Zombies. I don't know how you're going to feel about this, because the zombie motif has just been decimated.
It'll be fun. I think the zombie thing is going to be important, right? Like, very clearly, like, it definitely is going to be something that's a part of what happens in the MCU, right? So, like, whatever, let's zombie it up.
Yeah, I agree. It should be a good one. She-Hulk, an investigative lawyer drama that Dace Johnson's high on. That should be a good one, too. Miss Marvel, yeah. We touched on this a bit last week. Folks don't know how they're going to incorporate all of her superpowers because her arms stretch, and that's not realistic. So let's see how that one comes into the fold. Ironheart, I'm big on. It's basically going to be a young female-led version of Tony Stark, who picks up the mantle once Tony Stark has left this earth. Spoiler alert if you haven't caught up to what's been happening, but Riri Williams should be an interesting character for us to follow going forward. And then the last two, well, actually, sorry, first, I Am Groot, which, Ken, I wonder if there's going to be any dialogue besides I Am Groot.
I certainly hope not, right? Like, that should be the only thing that gets said in that.
I wonder if this will just be like a cash grab for Marvel here, and they'll be like, oh, look, we can sell the toys. What story would you want to know from Groot? Would you want to know like pre-Guardians 1, or would you want to know like how he grows up as like teenage angry Groot to adult Groot again? Do you want to see a planet? Do you want to see a planet of Groots, like a Chewbacca planet?
Yeah, I guess I want to know like where they come from, right?
Probably the ground.
I suppose you're not wrong.
We have to see. And then the last two, What If Season 2, do you think this is going to be another like summer filler show next year? And then Secret Invasion, which I know both of us are high on.
Yeah, Secret Invasion I'm very excited for. And I'm very excited to see how they tie in Secret Invasion with Moon Knight.
Okay.
You know, like having a like an unreliable narrator.
Not Daredevil, who the Deadpool.
Yes.
Yeah. A guy who messes with you.
Yeah. Like, and somebody who's struggling with like mental illness, and you don't know like what he's actually like, is what he's seeing legit?
Yeah.
You know, like who knows? So like, that's going to be really cool, especially with like the Secret Invasion stuff. And if there's like zombie shit going on too, like that would be really cool. So I don't know. I think like some of those things, I don't know. I think Dace Johnston put out an article not too long ago about why Star Wars not over promising on Disney Plus Day was such a good thing. Yeah. And maybe on the next MCU for Dummies, we'll get into a little bit of the Kenobi series, et cetera, et cetera. But for now I can say that Dace Johnson's article on Inverse, I believe it's a Dace Johnson article. I mean, she definitely tweeted it. Mentioned that when they brought up the old show that was going to have the crazy racist lady in it, who I forget what her name is. And then they had to put the brakes on Gina Carano. Yes. And then they put the brakes on it. You know, people get upset. And now here we are in a time where people are obviously like clamoring for more Marvel content, right? And they just gave us another 10 shows, right? Like another 10 pieces of content.
Yeah.
That if they cancel, or if they push back, or if they delay, or if they do this, or if they do that, like it just opens up so many more avenues for people to be fucking weird. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like the over promising is something that I don't necessarily love. I wish they would just give it to us like in trailer form instead of these big like Disney Plus Day or you know, what they used to do, the Comic Con stuff. Like, I get that you need to do it for like investors, right? Like, the idea is that they put out all 15 of these shows, or say they're going to put out 15 shows. People buy stock, it's an influx of money, and then they can produce the shows, right? Like, that's important. But it's just one of those things where now we're like, and we've talked about like the toxic fanhood before. Like, I think we're like right on the precipice of it being like the point of no return. You know, like where people are just so shitty about all this stuff that it makes it kind of difficult to enjoy. You know what I mean?
I'm kind of hoping some of it gets alleviated once the world opens up again and there's just more stuff to do. I thought there was like more things to do when people were going to work and there was less like, I don't know, I guess like quarantining. I don't know like how accurate that is or if I'm just reflecting my own thoughts on there. But yeah, I'm with you. I think like Marvel's done a good job though with kind of level setting expectations by just saying like, here's Moon Knight, it's going to star this guy and he's going to be this character, and this is the world, and this is who's going to direct it, and this is who else is going to be in the movie or the TV show, and then that's it. I would rather see that than like a grand revealing trailer that has like nothing to do with the actual movie, which is that how I think like it used to go. Like
yes.
Pre-internet, we would just get like this like amazing trailer, and then everybody would be like, I want to see that part.
Right. Like that's the cool stuff. Like you're supposed to sit in the theater and be like, holy shit, like that was a trailer for fucking Moon Knight. Like I can't fucking wait. Right. Like that's the cool stuff. And I understand like, you know, there's a whole economy around it now, right? Like there's people
with the internet.
There's people who get paid to bust these stories wide open, and it fucking sucks.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't know. I hate that. I hate it so much. I want to be able to like go on Twitter, tweet at my friend Rejected Hannah and make fun of, you know, like the movie she's watching or talk to Daze Johnson or talk to Leo Riedel or any of the other the guests we've had on this great show and like have conversation with them about trailers or about like what we think is going to happen without having somebody like come out and tweet like, oh, I saw Tobey Maguire blowing Andrew Garfield on the set of Spider-Man No Way Home. That's going to be in the movie.
Yeah. They got something in the water over there at the Spider-Man House and
Mouse. I don't like it. I don't like it.
Everybody feels so compelled to just release all of these. What a loser. Like, who's sitting on set? Like, I'm going to take a picture of these guys and then I'm going to put it out on Twitter.
And, like, so what do you think is going to happen? Like, what did you think? Like, I don't get it, man.
Like, they're going to rise to fandom or some girl is going to like them. Right? Like,
what do you think is going to happen? They're going to give you your own movie to direct after that? Yeah. No, you're never going to be able to work again. And everybody thinks you're a piece of shit. So cool.
Yeah. I'm not a fan of it. This is the last thing that I'll say. I'll throw it back to you, see if you have anything else, and then maybe we can wrap this thing up. But I was a little bit behind on all of the trailers that were coming out.
Yeah.
Batman, Morbius, there's a couple other movies. What I have liked seeing recently is that when I go see a Marvel movie, they are very focused on whatever is going on in like the DC Marvel universe. Like they're like tailoring these movies for me. And I like going to see Eternals and having the previews be Edward Cullen Batman, Robert Pattinson Batman, whatever his name is, whatever Patterson Batman is, Morbius, which is like not something I wanted to watch for 3 minutes on YouTube, but I was happy that I saw in theaters. And I think there's like one or two other things too, but those things are cool. I like that part of the movies that it still exists is a fun feature for me. But as far as the toxic fandom goes, you know, there was a great video I watched about video games in this space, because the next quarter of next year is supposed to be so promising with amazing sequels to games and everybody can't wait for them. But part of what makes it so great is waiting and anticipating and building up for it. Like the buildup is just as valid of the experience as it is actually experiencing the thing. And I think that's like totally lost now with people who have day jobs that we could just talk about this stuff all day, which not saying that everybody who does that is bad. It's just it aligns the incentives to have the new nugget of information that nobody else has, because then everybody will come to your channel. And I think that's a net negative for the overall fandom of, you know, creative content. So I'll get off my high horse there. Ken, anything else you want to kick around before we end up the show?
Nah. I think we're good. I think there's some fun stuff that's coming down the pike. We know that for sure. I think we all just need to be very careful. And I think we talked about this a while ago on like an old episode. Like Spider-Man No Way Home, not only is it going to be not as good as everybody wants it to be, right? Like we all know that there's no way it's impossible. We've made it impossible, which fucking sucks, right? So that stinks. But we've also like got to remember that this movie now is coming out on Christmas.
Yeah, 17th, you know? week before.
Like that sucks. I think that sucks personally. Just because it like is like at the worst time of the year. You know what I mean? Like it really is like it's a difficult time of year to go out and see stuff. So if you're listening, if you are one of the women in Germany that listen to this podcast, don't tweet what happens in the movie right away. You know?
Yeah.
Just like give us a minute.
Yeah.
Just give everybody a minute. That's all.
It's a great way to leave off on. Just give everybody a minute.
Just give us a minute.
Yeah. Ken and I will be back next week. Hopefully, not as late in the week. We had a bit of a little scheduling hiccup here. And then I had the sniffles. So hopefully we'll be back next week. Maybe recapping some of the Phase 4 stuff. I would love to just start getting into some of the Star Wars stuff, seeing how Ewan McGregor is coming back out of retirement to host us as Kenobi, get his good friend Hayden Christensen, a.k.a. Darth Vader, a nice payday since the last movie that came out with the two of them. So that's what I'm personally looking forward to. But Ken, if you got nothing else, man, then fly us back into the hangar.
Let's get the fuck out of here before Tiamat comes up and just rams us from underneath. So, folks, this is the MCU for Dummies. I'm Dummy Number One Ken. That is Dummy Number Two Lou. Follow us on Twitter, please. Give us suggestions, comments, questions, concerns, cookies for future episodes. We would love to hear from you. We really enjoy doing the podcast. It's a nice reprieve.
Keeps us young.
From the normal everyday life. So we truly enjoy any sort of feedback, any sort of engagement with the show and with us as the hosts. Like I said, follow us on Twitter, MCU for Dummies, and we will see you guys next week. I am Dummy Number One Kent. That is Dummy Number Two Lou. Bye-bye.